he was to be making. He was hiding among the baggage, and a whole different person from what we're going to see him wind up in today. And somewhere, Jimmy, I left my clicker back there. Okay, three chapters this morning, and they break out like this. Chapter 11, we see Saul actually taking a hold and doing something as he goes to fight a battle. Chapter 12, Samuel's going to talk about his old age and his farewell speech to the people there. And then we talked about last time that the difference between Saul in chapter 10 even, and we get to chapter 13, how much it changes. So chapter 13 is where Saul starts making his first big mistake, and we'll see some comments about that this morning. So, all right, people of the Amorites go up and besiege a city called Jabesh-Gilead, and we'll look at a map in a minute and talk about that. But let's talk about the Amorites first. Who are the Amorites? Who are the Amorites? Somebody. Descendants of who? The Ammonites. I say Amorites. Okay, I was going to make a distinction about that in a minute, but I've got that for you. The Ammonites. Okay, my apologies. Who are the Ammonites? Descendants of Lot. Okay. Remember when Lot and his family left Sodom for the destruction there? His wife was killed by the Lord for her disobedience. And then his two daughters had incest with him. One is the Ammonites, and the other is the Moabites. So these are descendants of Lot. I was going to make that point. I messed it up to start with. These are not the Amorites, which we'll get into later. These are the Ammonites. They're very close, but they're different people here. So these are the Ammonites, the descendants of Lot. So this town of Jabesh-Gilead is way up in the north, and we'll see that in a minute. Let's go back to our map. We've been looking at here with the Benjamin Plateau area, the part just above Jerusalem. Even though we talked about Jerusalem, it's not even in the history at this point. We haven't even been introduced to Jerusalem. Nothing's happened there yet. But this area up here is very, very important for all of our activities going on now. So it's Gibeah, the home of Saul, Ramah, the home of Samuel, Geba comes into play, Michmash, Mizpah. We said it's about 11 miles or so from Jerusalem up to Bethel here. So this is all a very small area in here. Gilgal's going to come into play. We'll talk about that today. So these little areas in here we've been talking about in this Benjamin Plateau area, just north of Jerusalem, area with lower elevation than what Jerusalem or some of the higher mountains do, and a major east-west corridor across the land here. Wrong button. So, keeping this in mind, let's take that spot now and move it way down to the bottom down here. So here's that Benjamin Plateau we're talking about. All right, way up here is Jabesh-Gilead. Over on the east side of Jordan, in this land of Gilead up here, way up here in the north, town of Jabesh-Gilead. So that's where the Ammonites have gone up and besieged that city. So, it seems kind of strange a little bit because they go up there and besiege the city, and the men of Jabesh said, we'll make a treaty with us. I said, we'll make a treaty with you, but we're going to do what first? Huh? Well, we'll put that first, yeah, yeah. But we're going to punch your eyes out if you don't do what we want to. And then they said, okay, give us 7 days till we find some help. That seems kind of strange to us that, okay, we're here to besiege your city, but we'll wait 7 days before we attack. Type thing. See if you go find somebody that's going to save you and help you. But that's what went on. And so they obtained this 7-day reprieve here to see if they can find help, somebody to come and rescue them. So when they did that, messengers came down to Saul back down in that Benjamin Plateau area that we've been talking about. Now, he was at home in Gibeah. Now, this next little phrase here, it's the first part of verse 5, I think it is, of chapter 11. What is seems a little strange here? What is Saul doing? He's out in the field with the oxen. He's supposed to be the king. Remember what happened in the last part of the last chapter? He was anointed king. The private anointing and then the public anointing. So here's the anointed king out in the field with the oxen. So it's a little strange when you just read that first phrase there. But this message comes there. Saul comes back in and the people are weeping. They're upset over the fact that the siege of this city has happened, and they're crying over it. And Saul comes back in and says, "What's going on?" And they tell him. Two things happened to Saul. What were they at that time? He got angry with one, okay? The Spirit of the Lord came on him, okay? So the Spirit of the Lord came on him and he got angry. We'll talk about that anger just a little bit later on with that. So we'll keep that point there in mind, his reaction to it here. So Saul takes a yoke of oxen, cuts them up, sends them throughout the land. Remember, we got a 7-day period we're working in here now. And it's not like instant message going on here. 7-day period. So he sends these oxen out and says, "This is the call armed. It's time for battle. We're going in and rescue the city up here that's been besieged." Even though it's on the east side of Jordan, it's still part of Israel. So anybody that doesn't come with us, if all are Samuel and Saul to battle, so will be done to their oxen, as we've seen none of these here. So the army is assembled. Rabbah comes out, and they get 300,000 men from Israel, 30,000 from Judah, and send word back then to Jabesh that tomorrow before the sun is hot, before midday, we'll be there for rescue. So the people of Jabesh send word back out to their besiegers, the Ammonites, that, okay, tomorrow we'll yield to you. Not exactly what they think is going to happen, but tomorrow we will give in to your request, and submit to you. But Saul brings in his people. He divides them into three companies, sends them against the Ammonites, and starts early in the morning, and by midday, what's happened? They are scattered so much that what? There's not a pair of them anywhere together. There's no two left together. They're totally routed by Saul and his army here as they go up and rescue these people of Jabesh Gilead. So, remember what these people said back at the end of chapter 10 when Saul was anointed? Remember these rebels that said, "Who's this guy that's going to be king?" And people didn't like it, but Saul let it go. So what do they want to do to him now? What are they ready to do to these people who are doubtful about Saul now that he's led this great battle? Bring him out and put him to death, okay, because they didn't rally him with Saul and didn't get in here with Saul. But Saul speaks up and says, "No, no, no. The Lord's given us a great victory today. There'll be nobody put to death today." So he spares their lives from that. So they go back down to Gilgal, and Gilgal is just east of that Benjamin Plateau area back down there. And Gilgal seemed to be a city where multiple times when the Israelites are called together for battle, it seems to be the city where they gather in. Some speculate it's because it's down near the Jordan, where people from the east side can come back across together. Don't know exactly for sure, but it seems to be the gathering place for a lot of activities here where all people come together. They go back down to Gilgal. And now Saul's kingship is affirmed. Not only has he been anointed privately by Samuel, publicly by Samuel, some doubters, he was back home. We talked about that last time. It seems like an anti-climax to chapter 10 because he's only king and nothing happens, seems like. But now he's had this great victory, so the people now rally behind him to make him their king. So everybody's happy, great. Sacrifices are being made because the Lord's given them a great victory here in chapter 11. Okay, something we missed, went through chapter 11. That's basically the story. We'll talk about some details here a bit later on. All right, chapter 12 changes now, and we're going to focus on Samuel a little bit, as opposed to Saul. Samuel is old and gray-headed, as he puts it here, been with the people a long time, served them faithfully. So he says, "I've heeded your request for a king. You asked for a king. We've given it to you." He makes some more remarks about that a little later in the chapter. So what does he ask the people now? "At the end of my career, what? Have I done anything to you? Have I taken a bribe? Have I done anything wrong as I have served you. I want to make it right in my old age here. Have I done anything during my service to you that you've got, that you're holding against me? If so, let's get it straightened out. And what was the answer? No. No. You have not done anything. You have not done anything wrong on our side. During all this time, you have service. And who does he call on for witnesses? To witness this agreement, if you will. Call on the Lord. He also appeals to somebody else. Their newly anointed king, okay? Witness before the king here at this time. That this is the agreement. I've asked you about it, and this is your answer back here as I begin to back out, if you will, a little bit of the public reign. You now got your king established, so you don't need me as much as you did before. So then he goes in and he reminds them about some things the Lord's done for him. What's some of the things you see there? Where does it go back to, kind of? Go back to when they were in Egypt and Moses and Aaron come, leads them out, and God delivers you, delivered this nation out of the hand of the Egyptians. And then he talks about as they come up in the time of the invasion and conquest area and the judges and the deliverance between Sisera and then also the Moabites that fought against them, the Philistines. Daniel recounts some of these times when God has delivered them over and over and over. And what kind of leader that God has been for you. You'll get to a punchline here in a minute. He's leading them talking about what God does for them over and over. And then he said, but you didn't want God to be your leader. You wanted what? You wanted this king. Okay, and he reminds them again. He's talked to them about this before, and now he's kind of drilling it in, seems like, to them, that you turned your back on God. And what great thing did they realize now? What did the people realize when Samuel told them all this? It was wrong, but they said, look, we have done this great evil. Okay, well, I'm sorry, getting ahead of myself. Let me get this one more slide first. What else had he talked to them about, deliverance-wise? And that's on the slide here. That is, the judges, Gideon and Barak, and the leader from one of those times, Jephthah, Samuel, all these other deliverances they've had, that God let them in there. And his recent victory over the Ammonites now. And God was your king. That's the point he made to him. God was your king, but you wanted this king. He says this. In dealing with computer stuff, sometimes we have if, then, else clauses. If this, then this, else this. That's what Samuel gives them here. If what? If you will serve the Lord. Let's back up a minute. If you and your king will serve the Lord, okay? If you, the people, and your king will serve the Lord, that's the if, then what? You got to fear him, serve him, listen to his voice, follow his commandments, don't rebel against him. If then, all will be well. The English Standard Version puts it. In other words, that's what needs to happen. You need to follow the Lord. You need to fear him. You need to serve him. You need to listen to him. You need to not disregard his commandments. If you do that, it's going to be well. Now, we get the however or the else side of it. That is, if you don't listen to the voice of the Lord, you don't follow his commandments, if you and the king don't do these things, then what? The Lord's not going to be with you. The Lord's not going to be with you. What have they seen already during the time of the judges? When the Lord leaves them, when the Lord forsakes them, what? It does not go well for them. That's when they get pulled into this besieging by the other nations around them. The judge has to come up and get them out. So they know in the familiar history here, they don't follow the Lord. Things don't go well for them. Doug? Over and over and over in the past, when they forget God, things don't go well for them, okay? Now, It's a field out behind this building out here. This is the south side here. If I know what's in it, if I park out that side, what's it full of? Wheat. Okay. What's it look like right now? Dry and ready for what? Ready for harvest. In fact, you drive through the county, you'll see lots of fields already harvested. So think about that. Look at that. Now, keep that in mind. The wheat harvest is there. Let's go back to the one of the little videos we looked at. And when does the rain come in Israel? Between what months? Do I remember? November, December, January, February, March. The winter time is when all the rain comes. Very dry during the summertime. So it's wheat harvest time. It's the dry time. No rain normally comes. All the rain comes in the other months of the year. So what's Daniel say we're going to do? I'm going to show you that what I'm telling you is from the Lord. So it calls for this sign. I'm going to pray to the Lord for rain and thunder and see what happens. He does pray for rain. And what will the Lord do? He sends the thunder and the rain. Now, what's the people react to that? What's their reaction when all of a sudden here in the middle of the dry season, this rain comes? When Samuel tells you, I'm going to ask for it, the Lord's going to send it, and it does. Yeah, right. That's what I'm looking for. They're fearful because they realize that what Samuel is saying, this if he's gone in there, if you will serve, if you will follow, if you will listen to his commands, and I'll be with you, but else it's not. And he calls on the history there and brings this sign. So he's trying to impress on in his old age. Who'd remind you of? Who made this long, long speech in his old age back earlier? Now, that's the whole book of Deuteronomy here. Moses in his old age. Here's Samuel trying to impress on the people the need to follow God. Okay. Now, they admit their sin. They admit their wrongdoing with the king. And he consoles them and says, it's been done. Don't turn to the Lord. He won't forsake you. And he makes one other comment about, even though I'm not going to be prominent in the leadership, it would be wrong, it would be a sin for me to stop doing what? Stop praying for you. Samuel says, I will continue to pray for you. Even though I'm not going to be the prominent leader that I have been, I will continue to pray for you as a nation. Okay. Okay, that's Samuel in chapter 12. Let's move now, go back to Saul, if you look at chapter 13. We've had Saul and the battle with Jabesh Gilead, and Samuel's parting his farewell, and now we get into chapter 13. We're going to make a little more points and applications out of that, and we'll look at something in like we always do. Okay, for First Chronicles, you can learn a little bit more about Saul and his family. Here's some points up here about it. What we talked about from earlier chapters, Saul's father was Kish. What did we say about Kish? Prominent man, remember that? Apparently he's wealthy, got some money, prominent guy, and his wife is on here. Three sons listed, which one do we know more about? Jonathan, of course, David's good friend, look to later on there. Got two daughters listed, which one of those do you know more about? Micah, okay, why? Who does she might have married? Right, married to David, okay. His uncle is, Ner, and that means that Abner then is his cousin. Abner's also the commander of his army. So the family ties here as far as the army, leader here for Saul. So there's a few names to keep in mind to go through Saul's family here. Alright. Saul gets an army together. It's a little bit confusing to look at the very first verse of chapter 13. And it says, in 1 year he did this, and in 2 years he did this. If you go read the American Standard, it says, when he was 40 years old, he began to reign. This slide on here that Mary put together, it's got 30 on there, some question mark by the side of there. Not sure exactly how old he was. The American Standard, like it says very clearly, he was 40 years old. But the other translations, King James, New King James, in the standards do not even put the age in here. And what they commented on this, they did that in the first year, if you go back to the other chapter we looked at earlier, that's what kind of happened in the first year of Saul's reign. And these events are going to happen in the second year of Saul's reign, as opposed to being actually the age he was given in there. So he pulled together this army, not a humongous army, not like the 300,000 he got earlier. Pulls up 3,000, and gotta go back to our map now. We're gonna get several cities in mind. Back to the Benjamin Plateau area here. Saul's got 2,000 men with him in Michmash. Then his son Jonathan got another 1,000 with him, and they're in Gibeah. So keep those two in mind. So we got Michmash and Gibeah. Philistine's garrison is at Geba. We'll see that just in a minute. And Saul puts all the people together here at Gilgal. So here's a map again. We looked at it before. So, and keep in mind, that's got about 11 miles from here to here. So when you talk about Michmash being here and Mizpah here and Geba here and Gibeah here, you're not talking much distance between all these people. The Philistines and the Israelites are all living in very, very close proximity here. Not like we're way over here and we're over here and we come out in, you know, 4 or 5 day journey to get to a battle line here. Now they're intermixed right here, very close together in this area here where they live. That's all the cities where they are just bunched together. And even the map here, this point makes on here is from this very chapter we're looking at here. Listing garrison here with the Micmac. So, Philistines though, where Saul's got 3,000 in his army, what does it say about the Philistines there? 30,000 chariots, 6,000 horsemen. And what comments about, did it make about the Philistine army there? They're like the sands of the seashore, okay? Philistines apparently got a humongous army compared to what Saul's got. We're going to find out something else they got too here in a minute that Saul doesn't have. Pretty significant little thing down at the end of the chapter. So, big, big, big army for the Philistines. Very small army for Saul, and they're all together in these little nearby towns here. So the Israelites are hiding in fear. Think about the size of the armies versus theirs, and they're scared. They're out running. So Samuel tells Saul to wait for him 7 days at Gilgal. And Gilgal's back over to the right, along the, almost on the Jordan River over there. Samuel tells Saul to wait for him 7 days there. Now, again, it seems like the 7 day period was used in other places to give time perhaps for an army to come together at Gilgal, people together. Samuel's going to come there and the intent is to offer sacrifices when Samuel gets there. So, day 7 arrives. And it's getting late. And Samuel hasn't showed up yet. The people are still running. From Saul, fleeing out. So Saul makes a decision, a wrong decision, a rash decision. Saul decides to offer the sacrifice himself. What's the problem? Saul is from the tribe of Benjamin. We talk about that over and over, right in this very Benjamin Plateau we're talking about, the area there. Who offers the sacrifices? Not the people from Benjamin. Okay. But Saul decides it. We're going to see why Saul decided to make that decision on this next slide up here. So, here's his excuse. Samuel comes up just after it happens. Saul goes out to meet him, and Samuel says, well, what have you done? What's going on here? What happened? So, Saul, instead of saying, well, I did this, look what he says. The people were doing what? They were running and scattering, okay? Who's he gonna blame next? Who didn't show up on time? Samuel, it's your fault. If you'd been here on time, I wouldn't have done this. Oh, and by the way, the Philistines are doing this. So the people were scattering. You didn't get here on time. The Philistines are getting pressure on me over here. And therefore, look what he says. I needed to ask all about verse 11, 12 or so in chapter 13 here. He says, I needed to ask the favor of the Lord. What's wrong with that? Yeah. It's okay to ask for the favor of the Lord when you do it your way. Chapter, verse about, is it 11 or 12 somewhere? First three words are says, then I said. See the verses there? Then I said. So Saul says, okay, I said I need to do this. I made this decision. I've got to get the Lord's favor. Whether I do it the way he wants it done or not, I've got to get the Lord's favor in this thing. Come on. Totally, totally wrong. So look what he said he did. I forced myself. I knew it was wrong, but I had to have the Lord's favor. People are scattering. You didn't show up on time. List things are... So I just forced myself to do this. Just look at all the things that's wrong with that. All the things that's wrong with that one slide there. Yeah, then I said, yeah, so I said that verse. What's he concerned about? I'm worried about my people leaving. I'm worried about Samuel getting here on time. I'm worried about the Philistines. What's God think about it? It don't matter. Here's what I think I'll be done. Oh, yeah. 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 I felt compelled. Exactly. We're worshiping the Lord, right? How we do it doesn't matter. That's the point I'm getting to exactly. Okay, we'll come back to that in a minute. Here's the point. Doing it wrong never makes it right. Never. But we'll hit this point again just in a minute. So, I told you earlier, chapter 10, everything's great with Saul. His humility's coming out. Lord's on his side. The Spirit of the Lord's with him. And now in chapter 13, just a short time, maybe even the second year of his reign, what's happened? What's the Lord tell him? Don't take the kingdom away from you. Your kingdom will not endure. Just that quick. Just that quick. Your kingdom will not endure. Because what do I want? What does he say he wants? The next point. I want a man that will follow me. Obviously, Saul, you're not that man. So let's look at the battle situation here, and it kind of tails off the end of the chapter here. So Saul leaves Gilgal and goes up to Gibeah with, and up literally, remember the mountainous area, he's up there with 600 men, not many compared with the Philistines, the Philistines have got, Jonathan's already up that way. Philistines send out raiders companies. You think about it, you gotta keep supplies for this massive army the Philistines have got. They go, I gotta get supplies somewhere. So they gotta raid everything they can to get their supplies out there. And what's the other big disadvantage? Other than number of people, mentioned it earlier, what's the big disadvantage the Israelites have? They ain't got any weapons. Okay? The Philistines had oppressed them to the point that there's no blacksmiths. There's nobody that can make weapons in Israel. You want to get your plow sharpened? Where you go get it done? Down to the Philistine store. You want to get your axe sharpened? Where you go? Down to the Philistine store. You go down to the blacksmiths and the Philistines, and they sharpen all the pieces of metal. There are no blacksmiths in Israel. Only Jonathan and Saul had swords. So Saul's got a numerical disadvantage, and he's got a major weapon disadvantage against the Philistines. And he's got one of the big disadvantages. That's what? Who's now forsaken him? God has. Because of Saul's actions. And that's kind of where chapter 13 just kind of dies out. There's no actual battle takes place. There's this gathering of this army and the fading out and this folly, this, what the slide called it here, this disobedience of Saul in chapter 13. So next time we'll get into chapters 14 and 15 And it gets even worse for Saul. Let's get into those two chapters. Okay, let's talk a little bit about some things that we've already mentioned some. Let's talk a little bit about some of these things from our lesson here. We talked earlier about Saul getting angry. Anything wrong with getting angry? We get angry, yeah. That's on the slide up there, Albert. We can't get the bottom. We've got to start the top, work down. Okay. Who had been angry before? Who had been angry before? On the slide up here, God had been angry, yeah. Moses, when he came back out of the mountain with those two tables of stones, what did he see? A golden calf. And Moses get angry? Yeah, he did. Okay. We ain't got to it yet. Later on, Nehemiah sees the oppression of the poor people. He's angry and upset over it. Yeah, that's just a couple. There's lots of examples of people being angry over a situation or wrongdoing that's going on. So to be angry is one thing. Bottom line comes to what Albert mentioned earlier. What do you do when you're angry? You control that anger toward the correcting what's wrong, and you don't do it by creating more sin. Okay. So the verse in Ephesians 4:23 says, be ye angry and sin not. Okay. Nothing wrong. There's gonna be times we're gonna be angry over a situation where wrongdoing is going on. Numerous examples of it here. But control the anger, point it toward the right direction, and don't make it worse and worse and worse by what you do yourself in reaction to it. Else on that? There's an element here. Go ahead. Okay, I got two here. Wait a minute. Sorry. Oh, are you? Okay. Yeah, Jesus throwing the money changers out. Okay. Very much so. Upset with what's going on. What they done to his father's house? They made a house of merchandise. They were not using it for this purpose of worship. Okay. Good point. Okay. Do we have opportunities to do wrong to other people? Sure we do. Do we always know when we do wrong to other people? Do we know when we offend some people? Maybe not. Okay? Maybe not. But what's Samuel trying to do here at the end of his life? What is Samuel trying to do? He wants to make sure several things. He wants to make sure any wrong he has done is righted. Okay? He does, so it's a personal thing with him, yeah. If he's offended some way that he didn't realize it or was wrong or he has overlooked it or hasn't corrected it or whatever, but he also wants to get the people to realize that, you know, it's not right to leave sins hanging out there. Not right to leave these wrongdoings hanging out there. Some passages up here, Proverbs 10:9. Whoever walks in integrity, walks securely. Integrity? Are you a man of integrity? You're a person of integrity? Who makes his ways crooked to be found out? Samuel wants those ways straightened out. He wants to know about it. And then Ecclesiastes 12, what's God going to do? The things we don't straighten out. He's not going to forget them. He's going to bring them into remembrance. There. So Samuel's, I think, got a good example for us. We need to make sure that we constantly try to make sure that if we've offended people, that please tell me about it. Okay. Please tell me about it. Let me straighten it out. Give me an opportunity to make things right. That's what Samuel's trying to do here. I think we got one more. This goes back to this obedience thing we talked about earlier. If both you and the people, you the people and you the king, will serve me, will listen to me, you don't rebel against me, do what I say, then all is going to be well with you there. Apply to us? Apply to us? Very much so. Okay. We start off on a tangent. We start ignoring what God says. Jerry made a point last night. Know God. Know His Word. Do it. I'm getting them right, Jerry. And then share it with others. So, know God, so you know His Word, Do what he says. Do what he says. What he wants of them, what he wants of us now. And there's one more up here. And this is what we talked about with Saul. This goes back. I did the class on Genesis in here, and we made a big point there. I always do when I go through Genesis. Back in Genesis chapter 3, when they had eaten the fruit, God comes to them. What's the first thing that Adam says? The woman you gave, the woman you gave to me, gave it to me. Okay. And Eve says what? The serpent. Golly. You probably don't remember my slides back there. That slide's got a great big thing on it. It says, and what? And I ate. And the I's are great big red about that tall. Okay. Who ate the fruit? I did. Okay. Who did I blame for it? Me. Okay. Don't start pointing your finger somewhere else. Job said, even if it be true that I've erred, my errors with me. I made the mistake. Okay. Then there's a great chapter in Ezekiel 18 that talks about the righteous, being saved. If the righteous falls in his way and doesn't repent, he's going to be lost. If he does repent, he'll be saved. And it comes all back down to not what the father did and the sins of the son, but it comes down to what? The soul that sins, it's the one that's going to die. Okay. It's not what the father did. It's not what somebody else did. It's not what the people around you did. It comes down when I'm wrong, who did it? Me. Okay. We got to learn that lesson. We got to all learn that lesson. Saul had a hard time learning that. Everybody else is wrong except Saul. Saul faced some pretty serious consequences for him. The Lord departed from him, pulled the kingdom from him, and a great downfall begins because of that. Okay. I left you about 90 seconds again like I usually do. Albert, go ahead. Okay. One of you guys, I don't know which one it was, made a comment to the young folks last night about praying. Maybe Jerry in his comments last night. Learn to pray. Pray a lot. Yes, sir.
What is wrong with the world? And he answered, I sincerely believe in Jesus. And I think a lot of people nowadays have a hard time doing that. We want to cast the blame on other things, on society. We don't want to realize that we're the ones.
If it will ever change, he's going to have to change it. Somebody's got to change it. It's going to be us. Okay. So, yeah. What can we do to fix society now? We can pray for it. That's a big thing. What can we do to help our brothers and sisters out? We can pray for them. We can go see them. We can have them out. We can pray, and we can pray, and we can pray, and we keep on praying. Okay? Over and over. Yeah, and what was Saul's heart to start with? His heart was good, okay? Who made the choice to go the other direction? It wasn't God. God didn't leave Saul, so Saul left God. Okay, with 14 to 15, yeah, 14 to 15 went tonight. Okay, thanks.